You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottes.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of the Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottes from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. And you're going to want to follow us on YouTube because tomorrow we will have the first interview with Isaiah Thomas since Media Day. It's been, what, 4 months since we've last talked to Isaiah Thomas. I got a lot I want to talk to him about. I imagine he has a lot of interesting things to say, so that should be coming up. We'll post the video as soon as we get it at Pepsi Center. My guess is we'll get it sometime around noon, so you can be on the lookout for that. We'll have full coverage at Denver Stiffs tomorrow. I think it should be it's an exciting day. It's the final game before heading off to the All-Star break. And it is the game that Isaiah Thomas is set to make his debut. So it should be a big one. He, he's listed as questionable. The team has sort of said that if he is if he's able to play, he'll go through, you know, his shoot around and everything. And then if he's feeling good, he'll play. To me, this means he's playing. I mean, you always want to give yourself an out so that people aren't asking questions. If for whatever reason he doesn't feel great tomorrow, then, you know, you just give yourself, you plant that seed early and give yourself an out. But I think it would take a minor miracle for him to not play, or not miracle, a big sort of something big would have to happen for him to not play in tomorrow's game. So expect that. Expect the debut of Isaiah Thomas. And man, I gotta say, there was a time during this season where I thought this day was not going to come. And it wasn't that long ago. The injury, when he wasn't healthy for the start of the season, and then when Denver had all of the injuries that they had and he still was not back, I just started to think, maybe he's just not healthy and this was a season that he was just going to have to let go. He has a huge incentive to try to play. I mean, he basically has one more shot at a big contract in him. He needs to play really well down the stretch and hopefully get a big contract from somebody. Even if it's only like a 2 or 3 year deal, he needs somebody to take a chance on him so he can get paid. He has been grossly underpaid for the majority of his career relative to what he has been able to do on the court. So he needs this. I think there's a lot of questions surrounding him. Is he really healthy or is he just trying to push it? Where does he fit into the lineup? The biggest question, I was preparing for this show. I thought 40 minutes ago I would probably start recording. I thought it would take me maybe a half hour to outline the show. It took me at least an hour on top of all the other notes I've kind of been putting together for a while now, because every time I look at the rotation and think, okay, here's what they'll do, here's how they can make it work, it just doesn't work. There, Michael Malone is going to have the toughest coaching stretch of his life starting tomorrow and running all the way through the end of the season. The Nuggets have a very tough schedule as they go out on the road. They want to maintain home court advantage, at least in the first round of the playoffs, if not for two rounds of the playoffs. It's attainable. Right now they're in the two seed. So there's a lot riding on this. And then on top of that, you're being given a player who's very, very talented, very good, but who hasn't played for two seasons, at least not a lot of minutes and not at a high level for two seasons, and who, oh, by the way, plays a position that you're already flush with talent for. So I do not envy Michael Malone and the job he has ahead of him coming up. It is going to be one of those ones where, again, as I just mentioned, I don't have the right answer. So I, full disclosure, I'm probably going to critique. If this doesn't work out, I'll probably critique some of the decisions. But those will always be critiques in hindsight, because looking at it right now, I honestly, sincerely do not know what the right thing is to do. So it's a fascinating circumstance the Nuggets find themselves in. The first thing I want to talk about, 2 years ago, and this is well known, Isaiah Thomas was an MVP candidate. He played that well. He was a guy that carried the Boston Celtics. They were almost, in a lot of ways, built around him. And around his talents, and I thought that team really fit and really brought out the best. What's interesting is I think there's some similarities to that team and to Denver's team, so I'm going to talk about those a little bit later in another segment. But I want to go over his numbers from Synergy. If you don't know, Synergy is a company that tracks advanced data for players. They have ways of looking at the players, every player in every single second of every NBA game, and identifying which plays are pick and rolls, which plays are post-ups, spot-ups, handoffs, etc., and tracking those over the course of a season so you can see how effective a player is, or every player in the entire NBA, every player in European leagues, Australian leagues. It's actually a really, really great tool, NCAA games. And it it tracks all that data, and you can say, okay, this is what the player is good at on pick and rolls. This is how often they score here. And it gets really detailed. It even has things like, you know, in the pick and roll, driving left, a player scores this frequently, driving right, this frequently, pull-ups, when the defender goes over the screen, under the screen. It's really great, and I'm very fortunate to get to have access to this. A lot of the stats I cite are from being able to look at this data and be able to share that with you guys. So I want to go over his 2016-17 season, easily the best of his career. He ranked in the 94th percentile in the pick and roll, the 94th percentile of all players where he was. He scored 1.04 points per possession, which is very, that's really good for, obviously it's the 94th percentile, so it's very good. But he, that's a solid mark. If you can get that out of your base offense, the pick and roll is sort of like the most basic action in basketball and the staple of a lot of different sets and a lot of different actions. So for him to be at that level, 94 percentile, and on an enormous amount of possessions, 34% of the time he was on the court, offensively, they were running through him, they were running pick and roll. So a lot of reps there, and he was very, very good. Spot ups, the 92nd percentile. You look at his three-point shooting and you think, okay, it's not that great. I think 35, 36% career shooter. I mean, good, but not phenomenal. But what's nice is he's the guy that generates a lot of the offense. He has the ball in his hands and he's setting other people up. But when other people set him up and he can shoot, he's a pretty deadly knockdown shooter. And I think Denver, clearly they have a guy in Jokic that generates an enormous amount of spot up three-point opportunities. So I think he, playing alongside Jokic, he'll get a lot there. But Denver just has a lot of playmakers, certainly more than that Boston Celtics team did in 2016, where he was the primary playmaker. I think on Denver, he'll be the primary playmaker often when he's on the court, but there's a lot of capable guys who can get him open look. So I think his spot up shooting should be very, very good. And he's also a guy that you watch him in practice and you talk to guys around in shooting competitions. He's a gamer. He wins a lot of those, even against some of the great 3-point shooters on the Nuggets roster, because I think when you give him good looks, he'll knock him down. 81st percentile on handoffs. This is another thing, of course, Denver runs a lot of, are these handoff plays. He's so quick and so small. His size is actually an advantage on offense in some ways. Because he's so difficult to guard, you can't really put your hands on him because it's very easy to foul a guy that's that light and that slight. And especially coming off handoffs where you have to really stay connected at the hip on a handoff or else you'll get screened out of the play. He's just very, very deadly there because you can't play him too close. You'll run him over and pick up the foul, but you can't sag too far off of him, or he's too quick and he'll bolt away from you. So 81st percentile on handoffs, I think that's encouraging. 95th percentile on isolations. This is, of course, one of the things I think you look at with him and Jokic is a lot of teams will just switch that screen because Jokic is so good at doing the screen and rescreen or the handoff into a rescreen really quickly and forcing. Jokic, one of his talents is he's so good at forcing defenses to do the pick and roll coverage they don't want to do. And if you switch a big onto Isaiah Thomas, he will roast them in isolation. If you switch a point guard, especially one that's put on the court to be quick enough to guard Isaiah Thomas, that means they're probably even more undersized than usual, then Jokic will take him down to the block and kill him. So there's a great opportunity for mismatches there. And then lastly, off of screens, 86th percentile. The difference between a handoff and off screens, a handoff would be coming off of the ball, like a handoff where the player with the ball is the one setting the screen. Off screen would be away from the ball. So one player has the ball, say, on the right wing, and then you run off of a pin down on the left wing and walk into a catch and shoot opportunity. So he's very, very good at those. 94th percentile, 92nd percentile, 81st, 95th, 86th. All of those, every single way, every single type of offense he is very, very elite at, or at least he was in 2016 and 17. And so that's sort of who he is as an offensive talent. He is not just good, he is elite. I want to go into some of the fit stuff and the different lineups I think we'll see Isaiah Thomas in. But before we do, I want to tell you about financemyadu.com. They've been sponsoring the show now for a couple weeks, and I find them very, very interesting. It's a white-hot Denver housing market. There's a need for more rental units, Airbnbs, and most of all, housing for family members. So instead of paying more money for a larger home, moving to a different neighborhood, you can affordably add an accessory dwelling unit, also known as an ADU, to your current home and take advantage of the booming Colorado market. There's several different types of ADUs. There's tiny homes, container homes, stick builds, converted walkout basement, mother-in-law apartments, carriage houses. If you live in Denver, Lakewood, Arvada, Golden, Castle Rock, unincorporated Jefferson County, Inglewood, or Colorado Springs, your house may be zoned for an ADU. By adding an ADU to your home, you can increase your home value, provide housing for aging family members or adult children who are still living in the home, becoming more and more common, monthly rental income. You can make a little extra cash by renting it out. I know that's becoming more and more common too, even Airbnbs. So to find out how you can convert your house, go to financemyadu.com or give a call to 720-650-1081. That's 720-650-1081. And they'll put you in touch with the experts that can help you with every single step of the way, figuring out how you can finance and get this done and just run the numbers for you. It's a really great opportunity, and they've been sponsoring the show for quite a while, or for a couple weeks now. So check them out, financemyadu.com, or give them a call at 720-650-1081. So we just talked about why Isaiah Thomas is an incredible player, especially offensively. Defensively, he provides a few big questions. But the biggest thing is that just where does he fit on this team? Because this Nuggets roster is a roster that already you're looking at players like Juancho Hernan Gomez, Trey Lyles, maybe being cut out of the rotation as everybody gets healthy and back on the court. So where does a guy like Isaiah Thomas fit in? Monte Morris has been so good this season and done everything that they ask that not only is there a question of would Isaiah Thomas be better than Monte Morris, but there's a question of what kind of signals do you send if a guy who is signed to you for cheap has done everything that you've asked, been a great teammate, a great soldier, all of these things. What do you do if what does it mean? What kind of message does it send to the rest of the guys if, hey, thanks for doing all that, but we're going to bench you for this other guy now who hasn't actually proved it with this team or been here grinding for two seasons now? I think that's a really difficult pickle that not just the coaching staff but the organization is in. On the flip side, they signed Isaiah Thomas this summer after already seeing Monte Morris play. I think Monte Morris has outperformed the team's expectations. Otherwise, I don't think they would have signed Isaiah Thomas. I mean, if they had the option to pick Isaiah Thomas up yesterday, knowing everything that Monte Morris has done, they would probably pass on that opportunity. So you know, you find yourself in, do you kind of, not, I don't want to say screw over, because I think that would be way too far, but do you sort of give Monte Morris a raw deal, or do you give Isaiah Thomas a raw deal who signed with you, and then you just say, well, we already have a guy, so you're just going to have to ride the bench? It's really, really, really tricky, I think, the position the team is in. I think Michael Malone, one of the things that he has been so good at this season, and really one of his strong suits as a coach, I believe, is communicating with his players and sort of getting them, you know, getting guys to buy in. And you look at how many different players have bought into their roles, no matter how diminished they are from what they wanted or whatever. Denver does not have a locker room of guys that are unhappy and feel like they're being undervalued. So as tough as this is, I think this actually lends itself to what I at least believe Malone to be very, very good at. But let's talk about lineup combinations. I think the priority now that, and this is not just about Isaiah Thomas, this is really more about Gary Harris should be back after the All-Star break. He won't be back against Sacramento, but he will be back almost certainly after the All-Star break. So it's really, what's the overall rotation looks like? Well, I think the first priority is and always has to be Nikola Jokic. He's your best player. You have to think, and I don't know, this is one criticism I have of Malone over the last couple of years. I don't know that Malone always starts from that. I think often, you know, he thinks, oh, well, Jokic will have to adjust to this guy or whatever. I think finding the most optimal lineups, and they have so many good players that it should be very, very easy now to find good lineups, not just good, but great lineups for Jokic. But you got to be thinking about him first and what fits him. The starting lineup, I think, from opening night is still going to be Denver's starting lineup for the rest of the season. Jamal Murray, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, Nikola Jokic. I know I joke on Twitter all the time, like, we're never going to see that lineup again because it just seems cursed that we won't, you know, never get to see them all. But I do think that after the All-Star break, we'll see it. And I have to remind you, that lineup has still only played 46 minutes together this season, and they have a 30.5 net rating. That means they're outscoring opponents on average by 30.5 points per 100 possessions. There's usually 100 possessions in a game. So that would mean when that lineup is out on the court, they are playing like a team that would blow you out by 30 points. That's how good that lineup has been. Now, 46 minutes is an incredibly tiny sample size, but that lineup, I just believe in. And the numbers in another limited sample size last season, that five played together for just roughly the same amount of minutes and had the same output. That is a dominant lineup. We talked last game about Denver stumbling into another great lineup with Monte Morris basically in Gary Harris's spot with that same group, and actually Mason Plumlee and Paul Millsap's spot. But it's still similar. The idea of that lineup is similar to the idea of this lineup. Three guards that can all shoot and handle the ball, a great defender at your power forward position, and then Jokic, who just runs the show. And anytime you get lineups that look somewhat like that, the team just absolutely crushes. So that lineup, a lot of people, my friend and colleague Matt Moore is really kind of sounding the alarm with the Nuggets, and he seems a little bit worried about where they are right now. And there's some reason for that. I mean, fatigue, this team seems a little annoyed. I've talked about Jokic seems to be hitting some sort of mental or emotional wall right now. And that's always, you always want Jokic to be at his peak. I think a week off will probably do wonders for him. So, you know, hopefully he rejuvenates and bounces back. But he sees, Matt sees a lot of sort of warning signals. The one thing I keep coming back to is this team, their best lineup still has only played 46 minutes, and they're still where they are. They have another level they can get to. And oh, by the way, when you're able to play that five, it opens up minutes for other great fives. It moves very good players like Monte Morris, Malik Beasley to the second unit, Mason Plumlee to the second unit, and then you just absolutely crush. So that first starting lineup, I think, the other thing about starting lineups is they play a lot of minutes. So I think that lineup needs to be Denver's starting lineup. I've seen some people throw out some ideas of, well, maybe we bring someone. Usually everybody hits me up, and I've started blocking people, as I've mentioned. Almost everybody's like, you know what you need to take away is Will Barton. Just a quick rant on that. Will Barton averages two fewer shots per 36 minutes than Gary Harris and a full assist more. He averages fewer shots than Jamal Murray and almost the same number of assists. It's crazy to me that people see him, because he has a different style of play, that they see him as the selfish guy. If he was selfish, he wouldn't average as many assists as he does. He would average more field goal attempts and all this stuff. It's wild to me. But I think that starting lineup, you play that unit, 16 minutes per game, and you get 16 minutes of a darn good lineup that is probably going to outperform their counterparts 9 out of 10 times. So that's the first lineup. The second lineup, Monte Morris. This is kind of a staggered starters and bench lineup, but Monte Morris, Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig, and Mason Plumlee. Now, here's what's interesting there. Torrey Craig at power forward is really small. Malik Beasley at small forward it's not like you have two medium-sized guys at the three and the four. You have two basically guard length sized guys. Malik Beasley, I think, is 6'5", 6'6". Torrey Craig, 6'5", 6'6". I mean, they're both the same. I think they're listed at 6'6", and 6'7", but they're both about my height at 6'5". A little long. They have some long and springy and active. But I like this lineup because I think with most second units, you can do strength versus strength. So if a team tries to play big with their second unit, you have Monte Morris, Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, three elite shooters out there, and Mason Plumlee, a very good pick and roll rim runner and roll guy. You're going to probably trade 3 for 2 at least some of the time with that lineup. So I think it actually works. The 1-5 pick and roll with Monte and Mason Plumlee has been great all year. You have two deadly knockdown shooters and Gary Harris and Malik Beasley. I feel like both of those guys are going to be great. And then you have one okay spot up shooter. I've talked about why Torrey Craig with Jokic, especially when he is playing a guard position or when he's playing alongside another non-floor spacer, is a killer. And it's not because he can't knock down the three. It's more because he is required to handle the ball. In order to be in that continuity offense, you have to be able to come off the DHO, and Torrey Craig can't do that. But in this lineup, you run the 1-5 pick and roll as your staple of your offense, Monte and Plumlee. You have Harrison Beasley spotted up on each side of the court, so you stretch him out. Torrey Craig can be in a corner where he's still going to have a lot of gravity, or you can slide him down even better. I think playing him inside the dunker spot is really, really great and creates a whole other dynamic where he can crash the boards and grab a lot of offense of rebounds and just be your hustle guy. So I like that lineup. Defensively, it could be a little bit weak, but against bench units, I just think it's going to be okay. So I really, really, really like that one. I would love for the team to find more of the minutes for the lineup we talked about. Monte, Jamal Murray, Will Barton, Mason Plumlee, Jokic. I think that should be a priority for Denver. That starting unit, that bench unit I just mentioned, and then this unit. Those three units to me, more important than Isaiah Thomas, are getting minutes for those three units. So you're already talking about a big chunk of minutes for those guys, and that's before we even get to Isaiah Thomas. Notice that Jared Vanderbilt is not in that. I've seen a lot of people say, well, I want to see him get in there, and I do too. I really like Jared Vanderbilt, but unfortunately, with where the Nuggets are, it's hard enough to bring in a former MVP candidate. Bringing in a complete rookie and then letting him learn on the fly in February with 2 months to go and a tight playoff race, to me, just doesn't make sense. His time will come. Vanderbilt's time will come. But it's not right now. I think it's probably better for him, unless he came in and was an immediate, like, great player. But that, you guys don't realize how rare that is, that happens in the NBA. Short of that being the case, it's probably better for him to not be handed anything. One of the nice things about this team, Malik Beasley is playing great right now. He was not handed the keys to this team as a rookie. He was not handed the keys to this team as a second-year player. Now in his third year, he knows that the minutes he has got, he has earned through blood, sweat, and tears. And I think that bodes better for him, both just as a player, as a person, everything else, knowing that what you got, you earned. It wasn't given to you. So for Vanderbilt, I think the same thing. He will get a chance this summer to show what he's got in summer league, also in workouts with the training staff. I imagine he'll be around a lot. And then next year, he'll have an opportunity to beat guys out for minutes, and I hope he does. But this year, not so much. Wancho is out of the lineup. I still think Wancho is an underrated player. But unfortunately, he just can't knock down a shot, and he's not very good right now, so he's out of the lineup. I hope that it would be nice if Wancho, you know, there'll be some kind of injury between now and the end of the season. Hopefully nothing major, but the odds of somebody rolling an ankle or having a tight hamstring and having to miss a week or two, you know, it just happens to every team. So there'll be opportunities for your Wanchos and your Lyles and maybe even your Vanderbilts. But right now, I think Wancho needs time off. I think he'll get that now, and he's a guy out. Trey Lyles is the other guy that I think we've just seen enough. We know he can help you out in a pinch. Some games he's good, but there's too many good players, and he is just not one of, in my opinion, the best 9 players on this team or 10 players on this team, so he is out. Beasley and Craig are in. Those two guys, I think, belong in the rotation, and while they probably will see a decrease in their overall minutes, I still think they're guys that if Beasley is out there and he's getting 15 minutes a game and he catches 2 wide-open threes on the wing, I feel pretty good about that. If Torrey Craig's in for 15 minutes and he's guarding your opposing team's best perimeter player, I feel pretty good that for those 15 minutes, he's going to make their life hell. So those guys are in, and I think the other three guys are out. So that means you got to find minutes for Isaiah Thomas. And first of all, how many minutes can he play? I imagine early on, I imagine Denver will try to ease him in. I don't think it's going to be one of those things where, you know, night one, he's back and he's playing 30 minutes, or right after the All-Star break, he's playing 30 minutes. I would be surprised if he got up into the 30-minute total on any given game more than maybe 5 or 6 times all year. Maybe he gets it rolling and he goes, but I think Denver will probably try to groom him a little bit more for, you know, a bench role, 20 minutes or less, and he's going to get in there 2, maybe 3 stints, and in those stints, he needs to be a guy that completely throws opponents off, and he can be that guy. He's a guy that can go in there and give you 10 points in 6 minutes, and the other teams have to bring their starting point guard back in, you know, 3 minutes earlier than they thought, and now they're worn out, and everything else is thrown off, because think about how many teams have a backup point guard that's just not very good. I mean, it's a pretty common thing, so so that's kind of what I expect from him, but I just gave you a bunch of lineups that I would like to see that do not include him. So what are lineups that he can be involved in that can be good? First and foremost, His weakest spot defensively is in guarding the pick and roll. He's too small. He can't contest shots. He has a hard time fighting over screens. And because of that, I think he's a very tricky player to pair with Nikola Jokic. Jokic, a very good, underrated and underappreciated defender, except for in the pick and roll, especially the spread pick and roll. And when you give him, I've talked a lot about this, but I'm going to bring it up again. I think Jamal Murray is as big of a problem in the pick and roll as Nikola Jokic, if not bigger. In fact, me personally, I think he's a much bigger problem than Nikola Jokic. But Isaiah Thomas, I think, is actually worse than Jamal Murray as a pick and roll defender. So teams, especially in a playoff series, if you play Jokic and Isaiah Thomas at the same time, they are going to force those two to be in a pick and roll together on the defensive end. And as great as I think they can be offensively, they're probably equally or worse on the defensive end. So that's a real issue. I don't know how much Jokic and Thomas can play together. I also don't know that you want Isaiah Thomas and Jokic to play together. Isaiah Thomas is an instant offense. Jokic is an instant offense. There's diminishing returns sometimes when you put all these offensive guys on the court together. What you need is at least a little bit more of a balance, especially when you talk about creators. Jokic is the creator. He's the fulcrum of the offense. Well, Isaiah Thomas will be the fulcrum of the offense. Even being unselfish or whatever, he's still going to be the fulcrum. So I would be, you know, a little bit surprised if he played more minutes with Jokic than he did with Mason Plumlee. I think he will almost certainly play more minutes with that second unit and with Mace. In Boston, in that season I was talking about, 2016-17, in Boston, Isaiah Thomas played by far the most minutes, about four times more with this five-man lineup than any other five-man lineup. Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder, Amir Johnson, and Al Horford. Now, here's what's interesting about that lineup. One, they have two bigs, and Amir Johnson is a stretch, you know, kind of a stretch big. He's sort of a stretch big in the same way that I would say Paul Millsap is a stretch big. In fact, I think those two guys are pretty close to each other. Career 34% three-point shooter from Amir Johnson, not exactly an elite floor spacer. So what I like about this lineup, Avery Bradley, I think Avery Bradley is a lot like Torrey Craig. They're strong. They're strong for their frames. They're very quick, good on-ball defenders. Play with a lot of energy. That season, Avery Bradley shot 39% from three on five attempts per game, which is really, really good. I don't think Torrey Craig is that good of a three-point shooter, but he's also 6'7", or 6'6", whereas Avery Bradley is 6'2", listed at 6'2". So, but I think there's I think those guys are similar enough. Avery Bradley's not the kind of guy you give the ball and say, hey, go create offense. And the same is true of Torrey Craig. They're both also guys that bring some energy and create, you know, chaos and second chance opportunities just by hustling. So I like that. There's nobody on the Denver Nuggets that's like Jay Crowder. So unfortunately, that one, there's just no player. Denver, that's the one sort of body type that Denver is missing, as a strong, stocky player. I'm going to use Gary Harris as the replacement for him. I think it makes, you know, Gary Harris is strong and stocky. He's just short. He's about 6'4". So that doesn't quite work perfectly, but let's call it, you know, Gary Harris, also a much better offensive player than Jay Crowder. So maybe you make up for at least a little bit right there. Gary Harris playing the three, or Torrey Craig playing the three. I think defensively, those two guys might be undersized, whichever one has to play the three. But again, against bench units, it might not matter that much. Amir Johnson, I think Paul Millsap is just a better player than Amir Johnson, certainly defensively. And even offensively, I think he can do everything that Paul Millsap can do. And then Al Horford and Mason Plumlee. I think Al Horford's a better player overall, but they're at least similar. They're not that different. They have perimeter skills. They're very good passers. They're athletic enough to finish over the top. They hustle on defense. I see. So it's not a perfect sort of, oh, these guys are identical, but it's close enough that I look at it and I go, if that was their go-to lineup with Isaiah Thomas that played four times as many minutes as any other five-man lineup, Denver has one that's close enough that I feel kind of good about it. So that's the lineup. Isaiah Thomas, Torrey Craig, Gary Harris, Paul Millsap, and Mason Plumlee, that I think, yeah, I would like to see that one. And maybe that five-man combination gets, you know, 6 to 8 minutes a game, and you stagger, you know, you sub one guy in for another. Maybe Beasley comes in for Craig, maybe Barton for Craig, Barton for Harris, something like that. But for the most part, you're playing with those guys in maybe two stretches a game. And I think it can be really, really dynamic. As much as there are question marks around that lineup, We know that it worked for Boston and helped them get out to, I don't remember how many wins they had in that season, but a very, very impressive season from them. If it worked for them, I think it would work for Denver in shorter stretches off of the against bench units. I think that can be really, really, really good. So that's what I'd like to see. The other lineup, and one other note about that. If you take out Isaiah Thomas and just say the Torrey Craig, Gary Harris, Paul Millsap, Mason Plumlee lineup, it's only played 12 minutes together this season, so there's not a huge sample size for that. So there are certainly some question marks to it. The other lineup, Isaiah Thomas, Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig at the 4, and Mason Plumlee at the 5. Now, this lineup is, again, I think, susceptible to getting blown out. It might be a little bit more feast or famine because it's so small. You're talking about Isaiah Thomas and three shooting guards, essentially, in Harris, Beasley, and Torrey Craig, and then Mason Plumlee. Plumlee and Craig provide some defensive chaos, but what I like about this lineup, and if you could figure out a way to get a rotation where that lineup I just talked about with Millsap and Harris, and if you get that lineup, 4 minutes, and then you finish that lineup with 2 minutes of this lineup, what I like is, especially at home, this is an awfully fast and explosive lineup. Isaiah Thomas, very, very quick. I mean, he maybe doesn't want to play full court, full speed all the time. He's a little bit more of a half-court guy, but he's so lightning fast. Gary Harris, very athletic, very quick. Malik Beasley is a transition bucket getter. He just creates opportunities in transition because of how fast he is. Torrey Craig plays at a frenetic pace, and it's just crazy. And then Mason Plumlee brings a ton of energy. So you're talking about a lineup, especially at home, if, as I think it would go with most games, your starters will outperform most lineups. You start to stagger different lineups in with your starters, over the first quarter, you're doing well. If you close with these two lineups that I'm talking about with Isaiah Thomas, there's a good chance that Denver, up 6-7 points at the end of the first, open second quarters with this ultra-fast lineup at home, and teams feel like they're in danger mode to start the second quarter because you're down 7. If Denver gets this lineup and gets out in transition as is fast and wins that battle, you're up 15. So I kind of like that one. Isaiah Thomas, Gary Harris, Malik Beasley, Torrey Craig, Mason Plumlee. It's very, very fast, and it could be good. So that's kind of what I think. Those are some of the lineups I would like to see Isaiah Thomas early on and see what he's got. I think Denver can learn a lot from those lineups. And I wouldn't be surprised if those were some of the lineups that we see him in. I'm very curious to see if he plays with Jokic a lot or if he plays more with Mason Plumlee, maybe even Paul Millsap or both guys. The only other note I have in here about things I'm kind of looking forward to seeing tomorrow, I think that Denver has more offensive talent than that 2016-17 Boston team. In fact, I feel pretty confident in saying that. Less defensive talent, of course. But offensively, I wonder if that means Isaiah Thomas can be a guy. You give him Malik Beasley and Gary Harris and Mason Plumlee. You give him these guys, he might be more of a passer this year than he was in Boston. Less of a scorer, but more of a passer. He's not, I don't think, a selfish guy. He has a style of play he likes where the ball's in his hands a lot, but he's a very, very good passer, and it could be one of those things where the scoring threat he provides in the pick and roll is so strong that he's just finding guys open for wide open three-pointers. And if so, I think that actually bode best for Denver in a lot of different ways. It should be fun. It should be fascinating. I'm very curious to see how it all plays out. Denver has Sacramento on Wednesday. There's a lot of fun narratives and storylines. So again, don't forget to check into denverstiffs.com and follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. We'll have all of the latest videos and everything to upload. It should be great. And then lastly, a quick reminder, I haven't talked about it yet. We have a live show, Society Sports and Spirits, on Sunday at 4:30. The first ever live recording of the Locked On Nuggets show. It's going to be Locked On Nuggets podcast. It's going to be cool because I've got some interactive stuff where I'll call volunteers out of the audience to come and participate in the show in different little like bits that we have that are going to be just a lot of fun. I think it'll be fun. It'll be funny. It'll be entertaining. It'll just be a really, really good night. And then after that, we'll stay and we'll watch the All-Star game with Nikola Jokic making his All-Star debut, Michael Malone as well. It'll be a really good time. Again, that's Sunday, 4:30, Society Sports and Spirits. I'm really looking forward to it, and I hope you guys come out and join me. Thanks so much for tuning in, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new episode.
Thank you for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.